You're listening to Beyond the Chart, where we go off the record with Baton Rouge General's medical elite. I'm your host, Brogan Taj. Let's get charting. Welcome back to Beyond the Chart. I'm your host, Brogan, and I've got an interesting one today. This one goes out to all those parents dealing with picky eaters. I'm joined by Megan Dewberry, a speech-language pathologist with Baton Rouge General's Pediatric Rehab Program. Welcome to the podcast, Megan. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me.
No problem. Glad to have you here. You want to just jump right in?
Let's go.
All right. So tell me a little bit more about yourself. How did you get into your field? Okay. All that.
I'm a speech-language pathologist, feeding specialist, and then very recently a certified lactation counselor as well. Kind of knew from the get-go that I wanted to work with kids. Actually did my student internship here in adult therapy and fell in love with Baton Rouge General. Mm-hmm. And so this was my first job out of school, and I'm going on 13 years. And oh, wow. So absolutely love what I do here. So
what is your day-to-day like here?
My day-to-day is in outpatient pediatrics, and so I see a variety of children, ages newborn all the way up to 18. Most of my patients are probably birth to five, but we definitely see a wide range of ages and disorders as well.
So what are some disorders and stuff?
Oh, goodness.
What are the most common?
For me, most common is going to be feeding difficulties,
okay.
And so that's going to be usually a referral from a pediatrician. And that diagnosis can really encompass just about anything.
Mm-hmm.
So whether it's a newborn baby that is struggling to feed at breast,
mm-hmm.
or a newborn baby struggling to bottle feed, or someone that's having trouble swallowing and maybe choking or coughing, it might be a toddler that's been doing baby food, but they move on to solid table food,
mm-hmm.
and they're refusing, or they're choking or coughing. It could also be even an older child, say 10, 11, 12, and the family's concerned because they maybe only have, 20 to 25 foods that they eat,
yeah.
and every single mealtime is like pulling teeth.
So I think we were talking a little bit more about that today,
kind of
picky eating.
Oh, goodness. That's a big red flag and a big, I guess, hot topic for our community.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people deal with that. So when is that a problem, like you said?
So there's a couple of different red flags. The first thing that I'll always tell families is if you have a concern, it's always better to follow your instinct. Trust your mom or dad instinct. I would much rather have a family come in and me tell them, you know what, all of this really sounds like pretty typical eating. Let me give you some more things to do just to make sure that we ensure your child continue on that typical eating path versus the family come in after they've had maybe 2, 3, 4 years of concerns,
mm-hmm.
and they waited until there was really a severe problem. So I guess for me, instinct is always number one. The second thing is if you feel like you just don't have a lot of consistent foods in your child's feeding repertoire. I'm always hesitant to give out a certain number. But if you just feel like you're having to be a short order cook,
mm-hmm.
and, fix your child their own meal every night, if meal times are just stressful, and whether that's stressful for the parent, stressful for the sibling, stressful for the child, we shouldn't see stress at meal times. And mm-hmm. so that's another pretty big red flag.
So I know like some kids go from liking a food one day to like, oh, I'm not going to eat that the next day. Is that a big red flag?
Not necessarily. I think it depends on the child and the age. So during the toddler stage, let's say to maybe even 18 months to 3, you'll have this stage of neophobia. And it's like you said, we eat green beans one day, and then the next day it's like, uh-uh, I'm not going to eat it. I hate green beans. Even if you've been eating green beans for 2 weeks in a row and mm-hmm. it was your favorite food, that's very typical of toddlers. What's atypical is if that neophobia stays, mm-hmm. if it lasts, if, a couple of days go by, weeks turn into months, and now all of a sudden our child that had, say, 20, 30, 40, 50 foods keeps dropping down to 20, 15, 10, 2.
Yeah.
We shouldn't see food repertoires decreasing. We should always see them increasing. So that's kind of a telltale sign if things are moving the right way.
So what tips do you have for parents that are dealing with this at home right now? That maybe you're not seeing tons of red flags, but they're just, it's just kind of starting there.
Well, I guess the best tip I would have would be for a family maybe with a toddler or an infant to prevent it. So
how do you prevent it?
So starting even as a young infant, let's say 6 months, introducing food. You always hear that slogan, you know, food before one is just for fun. We want to keep – you've never heard that slogan. Lots of parents love that slogan, you know, and I think we sometimes say it so that the parents don't feel like they have to make a big deal out of feeding, you know. Mm-hmm. It's okay if I wait until my child's one and a half before we introduce solids. And that's not necessarily true. We want to introduce food before one because we need those motor components developing, strengthening, improving. But we also have to make sure the manner in which we introduce them is exciting, that the child feels safe, that the child is having a fun time with food. Especially in South Louisiana, mealtimes are social. Like we love to get together. Like it's not just about eating the food. It's about having the crawfish boil and you're cooking it and you're talking while you're eating. And so if we turn this eating into a chore and not into a fun event, I really think that's where it starts to trickle down to where it's not fun to eat. I don't want to eat this food. This food makes me feel bad. And so I always recommend that we begin introducing food when the child has the gross motor components to be ready for food. For example, say your child is 6 months old and they're not sitting up yet. Well, everything that you do in your mouth is a fine motor movement. All fine motor movements are contingent upon gross motor stability. So it's almost like if I asked you to write your name with your non-dominant hand and then have a full-on conversation with me, likely the conversation's going to drop because you're focusing so hard on writing your name. The same thing happens with feeding. If you don't have that gross motor stability yet, if you can't keep yourself upright safely in the chair,
you're not focused on
it. You're not. And so that's when whatever you're eating or whatever goes in your mouth, it might not feel good or it might feel scary or, like, heaven forbid you choke or cough on something. You start to attribute that behavior or that feeling with the food rather than the fact that you were trying to balance yourself. And where that can get kind of difficult is that I'll have some families come in and they've received the recommendation from their doctor perhaps to start solids at 4 months. And for some babies, you know, if you have a really advanced child with their gross motor skills and they are sitting unsupported at 4 months or with minimal support, yeah, perhaps they would be ready. But I find from a gross motor standpoint, more often than not, you don't have that sitting skill until 6 months.
So that's kind of when.
That's when we'll push the food. But that's not to say don't have your child at the table before then. So a lot of times I'll tell my families, you know, start putting your little one in their high chair during mealtime with you guys, but give them activities. Give them, you know, a giant stalk of celery to chew on, not to swallow and chew, but, you know, to mouth on, to taste. Start including them in the social aspects of feeding so that they understand kind of what's expected of them at mealtimes. And I think setting your child up for the success is how you end up with a really adventurous, an exploring eater as they grow.
So, like, okay, after we get past the introducing and stuff, how do we introduce new food? Like, how often should you be introducing these new foods with toddlers? And
great question. So, obviously, the more practice you get with something, the better. So I don't want to tell families, oh, you have to do this many times a day. As a working mama, I think a lot of my introductions came on the weekend. And so we might not have a whole lot of introductions during the work day or work week, if you will. But I focused a lot of opportunities during the weekend, and it could be the same thing. It's whatever works for each family. As a feeding therapist, I don't so much care about how much the child takes in as if they're having a good time with it. So if your child only has maybe two or three spoonfuls of a certain food, but they're laughing and banging the toys and giggling the whole time, then to me, that's success. You don't have to, you know, success isn't measured by how many ounces you take in of that food, but it's measured by how the child is reacting to the food. And I think not limiting yourself to what you feel like a baby should eat. Like, we always think about peas and butternut squash and sweet potatoes, but babies can have roasted beets. You can puree a beet. You can puree parsnips. I mean, your options, kiwi, all those things are available. And then as a child's oral motor skills develop, you start offering those foods in whole forms as well. And, you know, I was never one to tell my child no. Like, if they asked to try something, I might give them maybe a verbal cue, you know, that one has a lot of spice.
Yeah.
Just to kind of warn them to how, oh, that one's a really sour food. Mm-hmm. You know, I wonder how it's going to feel in my mouth. So letting them try things, but giving them the verbal cues. Yeah. We call it in therapy mindful eating. So talking about what you're doing. And that sometimes desensitizes the child too. Like you think about a child running and they fall down. Mm-hmm. As a parent, the first thing we say is, oh, you're okay. Yeah, you're okay. Get up, get up. And even in feeding, you know, when the baby is bound to make that first like, ooh, face, you know, say it's green peas or broccoli, a bitter vegetable, you know, I might say, oh, that's different.
Yeah.
Rather than jumping to, you don't like that, give them some sort of verbal cue, help them begin to understand and explore that food.
Awesome. Does like picky eating and stuff, does that ever have anything to do with like the textures of the food?
It can definitely have to do with the textures. So when I do have a child that comes in with picky eating, I'm usually trying to figure out what's the root cause. Like, is it something physiological? Was there maybe reflux as an infant? Is there constant constipation? Is there, you know, something going on internally that's making them not want to eat food? Mm-hmm. Is it a sensory component? Is there something about the way the food looks, smells, tastes, the texture? Is it too lumpy, too thick, too crispy, too cold? We have so many different sensory components that can affect it. And then lastly, motor. So sometimes we'll have a child that comes in that for one reason or another hasn't efficiently developed the motor skill to take that food in. So maybe they're not able to chew with an age-appropriate chew. So when they go to eat, say, a meat, they feel unsafe, and then that food ends up pocketed in their cheek, or they gag and they retch it back up. And so as a feeding therapist, that's kind of where we're pulling pieces out to figure out, okay, why? Why are you struggling with this? And then how do we address that skill? Sometimes it's one of those areas. Sometimes it's a combination of all three. But what those result in are behaviors. You know, children don't refuse food for no reason. There's always, you know, it's an innate part of our body to want to eat. There's something that stops us from eating. And if you're afraid of something, if something gives you anxiety about it, yeah, you're going to have a big reaction. And then you put that reaction in a child, it can be, it can look like a tantrum, but there's a reason for it. They're protecting themselves. So it's us trying to figure out why.
So do you have any advice for like an adult who's a picky eater trying to make their kid not like them?
Yes. As a previous picky eater myself, you can totally do it. We call it food chaining. It's slowly desensitizing. It's neutralizing your feeding system. It's finding foods that you currently accept or currently tolerate, maybe even prefer, and finding a food that's similar and starting in slow steps to work on that food. So, you know, say I like apples, but that's really the only fruit that I have in my food repertoire. What's a fruit that maybe is a similar color, a similar texture? So, like, I might chain apples to a really hard, crispy pear. You know, it's a start. They're not the same. There's a slight taste difference, but, you know, I might need to look at it. I might need to feel it. You know, we use our hands a lot to explore foods. And it's small steps, like even for a child, whether you're a child or an adult, you know, it's never too late to make changes in feeding, but it's not this magical wand where you wave it and the next day, ta-da, we're here. That's one of the challenges with feeding therapy is it's really small steps. And those steps do start to snowball and you start to expand to other things. But in that same sense, if something in your environment, I always warn my families at holiday times, like, be careful of uncle or aunt so-and-so. You know, if a food is forced upon a child, once we've begun feeding therapy, we may roll back several weeks, months, worse from progress that you've made when you build or break that trust. So I think that's the kind of secret, if you will, to feeding therapy is slowly building trust with yourself or with your feeding therapist to explore and try those new foods.
Awesome. That's all awesome information. Yeah. So I like to do some rapid fire questions.
Ooh, I love it.
All right. So they may be related. They may just be random.
Okay.
What TV shows are you binging right now?
This is a good one. What have I watched? Oh my goodness. I can't even think of anything that I've been watching. I'm a big reader, so I don't watch a lot of TV. I guess last thing I watched was Grey's Anatomy. Caught up on Grey's. There we go.
Awesome. What's your advice for somebody wanting to get into this field?
Oh, great question. We have some amazing schools down here in Louisiana. I'm a LSU graduate, so I'm pretty partial to them, but we also have a great school with Southeastern. If you are interested, go find a speech or feeding therapist to shadow. Mm-hmm. So I will constantly have undergraduate or graduate students come and ask, hey, can I follow you around for a day? If you think you want to get into this, come see real life application. It's great. It's amazing.
Awesome. Do you prefer sweet or salty foods?
Sweet.
What's your favorite sweet? Like, what's your go-to?
My go-to or like my weakness?
Either.
Okay, my weakness is totally a donut. My go-to is going to be, I guess, a fruit.
Okay. Where is your favorite place to vacation?
The beach. I love the beach. We're headed to Barbados in 2 weeks, and ooh, so I cannot wait to try out their beach.
Awesome. What's the most rewarding part of your job?
Oh, goodness. It's going to be a toss-up between, obviously, the child progress, but then also seeing the parents. I have some really great parents of my patients on my caseload. And so creating the rapport, building relationships with them, and seeing them grow in their confidence, helping their children, mm-hmm. That's really special. It's kind of what motivates you easily to keep on going on those really, really difficult therapy days.
Yeah, awesome. Do you prefer cold weather or warm weather?
Cold weather as long as I'm warm. Okay. I need a jacket or a blanket, but I like the cold more than the hot.
All right. What is the last book you read?
I just read Redeeming Love by Francine Rivers. There's a movie coming out in 2 weeks or so. It's fantastic.
Would you recommend the book?
I love the book. It's not a new book. It's an old book, but it's one of my favorites.
Awesome. What's your like go-to weeknight meal, like family meal?
Oh, for me, it's probably going to be some sort of a chicken. I'm a pretty big chicken, if not mm-hmm. chicken, shrimp fan. And we love Brussels sprouts. Brussels sprouts are a staple in my household.
How do you cook your Brussels sprouts?
Roasted. Yeah. Oh, they're so delicious.
Awesome. I think that's about it. Is there anything else you want our audience to know?
Not that I can think of. I guess the biggest thing is just follow your gut instinct. Mm-hmm. If I had to think more times than not, that's what families say is usually I wish we would have come in mm-hmm. when I had that first concern, that first inkling that this was more than just quote unquote picky eating.
Yeah.
And then just to be careful what labels you give your child. Like if your child hears you call them a picky eater, we tend to start to live up to the labels. And so like I'm pretty quick to start calling the child that's in therapy, you know, you're an adventurous eater where we're learning to explore foods. That term has definitely been coined by Melanie Potok. She's a fantastic feeding therapist. She actually has a book coming out called Responsive Feeding on January 11th. So families are looking for some literature to read. She is phenomenal. But think of your child as exploring and learning about foods, and they just need a little more input.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being here.
You are so welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
Great. Thanks for going beyond the chart. Follow Baton Rouge General on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for behind the scenes, upcoming episodes, and more. Feel free to subscribe and leave a review.